Okay, now, Maseches Sukkah is interesting. Just as a brief overview, there are five prakim in the Masechta. The first parak in the Masechta deals with the halachos of the Sukkah itself, of the structure of the Sukkah. The second parak focuses primarily on the dinim of yeshiva b'sukkah. There are halachos of living, dwelling in a sukkah. When is one exempted from that? What exactly is required in terms of dwelling in the sukkah? The third perek teaches me the halachos of the lulav and the esrog, etc., the dalad minim. The fourth perek basically talks about laws of simcha, Simchas Beis HaShoeva, Halel, etc. And the fifth parak continues with those themes. So, the Aruch Lener, is an interesting fellow. We'll probably be using him a lot, although I notice that this Beit Midrash does not have a set of Aruch Lener, so I'll try to obtain one for here. The Aruch Lener was Reb Yaakov Ettlinger. Reb Yaakov Ettlinger was the Rav of Ahu, which are three towns in Germany, Altoona, Hamburg, and something. So the Aruch Lener, according to tradition, by the way, he's the one who gave smicha to Rabbiner Samson Raphael Hirsch. However, no one ever saw the smicha that Rav Hirsch received from the Aruch Lener. In the Artscroll biography of Rav Hirsch, they say that there was a fire in Rav Hirsch's house at one time, and maybe that smicha was burned. I don't believe it. I don't believe it. I also don't believe it because just yesterday someone posted, one of the people I follow on Twitter posted Rav Hirsch's application to be the chief rabbi of London. And when he applied to be the chief rabbi of London, it says that he has smicha from Chacham Isaac Bernays. It doesn't say anything about smicha from Reb Yaakov Ettlinger. So he probably didn't have smicha from Reb Yaakov Ettlinger. Nonetheless, Rav Hirsch learned by Reb Yaakov Ettlinger. Reb Yaakov Ettlinger was a Gaon Olam. He was an unbelievable Talmud Chacham, and he wrote really wonderful svarim on many mesechtos. On Sukkah in particular, he has two svarim. One is called the Aruch Lener, which is the same sefer he has on other mesechtos and shas, and the other is called the Bikurei Yaakov. The Bikurei Yaakov are his chidushim lahalacha. And the Aruch Lener is bothered by this kasha. How come Maseches Sukkah follows this order? He says it would make more sense to follow an order that that lulav and esrig comes first and sukkah comes after. The Torah writes, "Ukachtem lachem bayom harishon priyet hadar kapos tmarim." Then, like two pesukim later, basukos teshuv as yamim. Right. So it would make much more sense to begin with lulav and esrig, and then subsequently to segue into the laws of the sukkah. How come we begin with the laws of the sukkah? Moreover, the laws of the sukkah there are many of them, and they're detailed, they're complex. It would make more sense to begin with the laws of lulav and esrog, because the Gemara has an expression, the ayidi dezutri milsaihu, because there's very few halachas, so we try to get it out of the way earlier on. So it would make more sense to start the Masechta in a different way. Nonetheless, the Aruch Lener says that we begin with the sukkah, because he maintains that the Masechta goes in chronological order. Okay, this is a chiddush. By the way, I've noticed that every history textbook in the world also goes in chronological order. Hence, like the Revolutionary War is before the War of 1812. Like, why is that? The teretz is that we're going in order, right? So chronological order over here means as follows. It means that the first parak is not really laws of the sukkah, it's laws of building a sukkah. The second perek is laws of sitting in the sukkah, and then laws of the lulav and esrog. I build my sukkah before yontiv. In fact, I'm supposed to build my sukkah right after Yom HaKippurim, it says. Right? The Rambam writes, at the beginning of Hilchos Sukkah, you build your sukkah right motzai Yom HaKippurim. So the sukkah is built before yontiv. Then the first thing that you do on Yom Tov is you sit in the sukkah. You don't take lulav and esrog until the next morning. So therefore, I'm going in order. And by the way, when I talk about, you know, the dinim of simcha, etc., there's a whole discussion in the Gemara. It could be that there's no simcha the first night of Yontif, there's only simcha the second night of Yontif. We'll get to that, like, I don't know, 3 years from now. But the basic idea is that the Masechta goes in chronological order. That's his chiddush, which I think is a nice way of setting the tone for the Masechta. But he also adds that this idea that there is halachos of building the sukkah is because there's a mitzvah to build a sukkah. Now that itself is a big chiddush when you think about it. Usually I would say that building a sukkah isn't a mitzvah, no?
Hechsher.
The mitzvah, it's a hechsher mitzvah. I have to prepare, like, I don't know, when I have to blow shofar. So in order to blow shofar, I have to, like, chop a horn off of an animal. There's no mitzvah to chop a horn off of an animal. The idea, though, is that building a sukkah probably is a mitzvah. You see that actually from that Ramah that we referred to. The Ramah writes, Motzei Yom Kippur, you want to go and do a mitzvah, no? You're tired, you're fasting all day. So what's the mitzvah you do? You build a sukkah, huh? Like, I would say, like, learn. In fact, they say the Rebbe Levi Yitzchak Berditchev, Motzei Yom Kippur, used to stay up all night to learn Masechta Sukkah. Okay, he was a holy Jew. But the idea is that building a sukkah itself is a mitzvah, and probably conceptually, just to do a little bit of chassidus, the idea of a sukkah is that it's a continuation of the hashras hashchina that we feel in Yom HaKippurim. During the Ilah, we say, Yach bi'enu tzeo yodo tachas kanfei hashchina, the Rebbeinu Shel Olam embraces us, he brings us under the wings of Shechina, whatever that means. But the sukkah reflects the fact that coming after Yom HaKippurim, now we're ready to be in a place where we're fully enveloped by Kedushas Hashem. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying, you know what, don't think this happens on its own. You got to build it yourself, Chefra. And there's a mitzvah right after Yom HaKippurim, there's a mitzvah to go and to build a sukkah, to build a place where HaKadosh Baruch Hu is present. Rav Kook famously said that there's only two mitzvahs in Judaism that you do with your entire body: the mitzvah of being in the sukkah and the mitzvah of yeshiva, Eretz Yisrael. And both of those mitzvahs are really one and the same because we're experiencing the Shechina. And the idea of experiencing the Shechina is, again, this probably connects to political Zionism, but I try not to get political. But the idea basically is that you build a place of Kedusha, you build a place of the Ribbono Shel Olam, and I think what we're trying to do here is build a place of Kedusha, a place of learning Torah. So let's go. That's the introduction. Ready? Zok the Mishnah. Sukkah shegavola mailo me esrim ama is psula. The Mishnah says that a sukkah that is taller above 20 amos. It's like a very funny expression, no? Gavoha lemala me esrim ama. I could write sukkah shegavola, the sukkah's tall, right, me esrim ama. That word lemala doesn't really do anything for us. And in some of the Kisvei Yad, actually, the word lemala is not here. The Rishonim, however, are bothered by Yakasha. I don't think we'll go into this because it's a little too detailed. But in the parallel case of the Mavoi, which the Gemara brings up, so it does not have the word lemala. And the Ritva and other Rishonim are bothered by this kasha. How come by the sukkah it has word lamayla, by the mavoi it doesn't? It's just worth noting that in many of the Kisvei Yad, in both cases, you don't have the word lamayla. So, okay, that's neither here nor there. So the Mishnah says, a sukkah that is over 20 amos is posel. The impression that you get from the Mishnah is like the yesod that we said before of the Aruch Laner. Who wants to plug this in? How is this Mishnah a raya to the Aruch Laner as yesod?
What you said, the order?
The idea that he presented about the order, which connected to the idea there's a mitzvah to build a sukkah.
Psula?
Psula. The word pasul seems out of place. Like, we don't think about this. Right? The word pasul means like the chefts of the mitzvah is somehow deficient. Right? But l'cha'ora, I don't care about the sukkah itself. I care whether I get a mitzvah sitting in the sukkah. No? No, the teretz is that there's an element of pasul here, which means I don't fulfill the mitzvah of building a sukkah when I build a sukkah above 20 amos. Hi, Yael.
Why is it that you can't say that it's just... I don't know, I thought of it as like the same way I don't have a good example at the moment, but like, I just think that like you want to fulfill the mitzvah in the proper way, so the sukkah itself has to, these are just the laws of that sukkah, and if the sukkah doesn't, it doesn't matter who built the sukkah, it doesn't matter if someone else built the sukkah.
So,
if it's taller than the 20 amos, it's possible.
Okay, so how about writing a sentence like this? Hayoshev besuka shehi gavol lamal me'esrim ama lo yatsa yedei chuvato. How about writing a Mishnah like that? Wouldn't that make more sense?
Yeah.
Right? But the Mishnah don't say that. So the idea is, I think, that the nusach of the Mishnah, that word pasul, is indicative that we're talking about whether I fulfill the mitzvah of building a sukkah. Next, Rabbi Yehuda Machshir. Right? Rabbi Yehuda says that it's going to be kosher. Again, we'll have to analyze this machlokas as well. If the sukkah is not tent fachim, or the sukkah does not have three walls, or if it has more sun than shade, it is pasul. Now, there are different aspects of the sukkah. The sukkah has walls. The sukkah has schach. We could question some of these dinim with respect in particular to the sukkah that's not tent fachim tall. Is that a psul in the schach? Or is that a psul in the walls? The case in the Mishnah of She'en La Shalosh Defanot, if it doesn't have three walls. So I think that's clearly a psul in the walls, no? Yeah. I think that's pretty obvious. The case of Chamosa Meruba Mitzilosa is clearly a psul in the schach. The sukkah above 20 amos, is that a psul in the walls or in the schach? Is it that the walls are deficient as walls, or is it that it can't be schach when it's too high up? Again, I'm not going to answer these questions now. This is kind of, one of my rabbis used to have an expression, you put it in your pipe and you inhale. I don't know if I'm allowed to use that anymore, post-Clinton, but you understand what I'm saying. We'll discuss it as we go on. Again, if you read the Ritva here in the Mishnah, he has an interesting comment that ten tefachim is a psul in the schach, not a psul in the walls. That itself is interesting. The real din in the Mishnah that everyone focuses on is the last line in the Mishnah, chamosa meruba mitzilosa psula. If there's more sun than shade, so it's not a good sukkah, it's a pasul sukkah, and therefore, l'cha'ora, I don't fulfill the mitzvah of building the sukkah like the way we explained it. So what does that mean? So let's look at Rashi, no? Shechamosim Rebbe Tzilasa, zokt Rashi, Hamu'at batel berov, v'harehu kemi she'eno, v'ashem haschach kruya sukkah. So Rashi is saying, I'd say, three clauses in this Rashi, no? The first one, Mu'at Batel Berov. So what does that mean? Who wants to take a stab at this? There's nothing you could say that will be wrong, because anything you say, someone else will have said. But what does it mean that Mu'at Batel Berov?
Someone would say there's something that, yeah. Can I do that?
Sure.
Okay. She suggested that the Mu'at Batel Berov means that even though there's going to be somewhat sunlight that comes through, if the ratio of sun is, I guess, small enough to...
Again, we're talking about that there's more sun than shade, right? Chamosa meruba mitzilasa, okay.
So if there's more sun than shade, then the miut of the shade is kind of batel from the overexposure of sun.
Right. So the simple reading of Rashi, I'd say, I'd agree with you, is the muat, meaning we're talking about the schach, right? The schach is batel in the rove sunlight, and therefore that schach is non-existent. Va'al shem haschach kriya suka, and therefore because I don't have schach anymore, so it's not a suka. The word suka and the word schach share a root, which means to cover over, etc. So the simple meaning of Rashi, I'd say, is that the schach is going to be batel. Now, there are... The word bittel is a concept that like I deal with in my other life when I teach Yerideya a lot. And bittel means that, let's say, I have some tarfus, some treif, that falls into a pot. So you have one little bit of pig that falls into your whole stew. It falls into your barleys and your potatoes. So if it's batel b'shishim, if you have 60 times more barley and potatoes, then the chazer, so it's going to be a kosher cholent. Not only is it going to be kosher, but many rishonim say that you're an apikairis if you refuse to eat the cholent. That's the importance of eating cholent, even with pig in it. Okay, but I don't think it means that. But the point is that there are regular dinim of bittel, and the chaorah, what Rashi is getting at, is that this is a ordinary din of bittel, that the muat is batel b'rov. There's no din of shishim that's required by schach, because the din of shishim is only when there's tam, when there's some flavor that's contributed. Over here, there's no flavor. So therefore, it's batel b'rov. That's probably what Rashi means. That's, I think, the easiest approach to Rashi, which is apparently what Liat suggested. But Liat didn't say it herself, so we'll trust you. That's what Liat suggested. Now, what's wrong with this Mahalach and Rashi? Hannah?
It's not actually physically true. So if you were standing under a bit of the stuff that was giving you shade, would you not be Yotze?
Right. So one problem is, like, you can't contradict reality. There is some shade still. So this expression, v'harei hu kemisha eino, it's as if there is no shade, like, it's not true. And if anything, if you'd ask me, I would say that maybe it should still be kosher. Like, there is a minimum shear of a sukkah. A sukkah has to be 7 tefachim by 7 tefachim, no? It's enough for a rosho, a rubo, a shulchano. Now I could sit there, and my table's there. It's like 7 tefachim. No idea how this works. Whatever. I think I can't imagine how anyone could fit 7 tefachim, but that's a different story. So, okay. So maybe I'd say that if you have a minimum amount of shade, it's still kosher. So Rashi's telling me no. Even though I have 7 tefachim of shade, the halacha disregards those 7 tefachim of shade. I have the minimum shear. If I wouldn't have the minimum shear, there's nothing to talk about. But even so, the din of chamasa meruba mitzilasa is that I ignore the amount of shade that I actually have. It's kamisha eino. But Hannah's saying, how on earth can you do that? Okay, that's something that's worth thinking about. Let's look at the Ran. Who was the Ran? When and where did he live? Before Moshe Rabbeinu or after? After Moshe Rabbeinu, before Moshe Feinstein or after? Okay, so we know everything about him. Who was the Ran? The Ran is actually one of the later Rishonim. The Ran... Actually, the Chidah writes in one place, you can never ask a steer in the Ran, because since the Ran is like one of the last Rishonim, he's just a malakate of other Rishonim. You can never ask a steer in the Ran based on that. Okay, whatever. Yeah, so the Ran, I think the Ran died in 1380, but we don't know when he was born. We don't know when anyone was born. So the Ran, on Daf Aleph, B'Daf Be'Harif. Chamasim Rub Mitzilasa Zuk the Ran, Kasav Rashi, Muat Bato B'Roiv, Arehu Kamisha Eno. V'lo ratza lomar sh'aschach ha-mu'at yehe batel ligamrei berov ha-megula, v'yehe ki'ilu ein sham schach klal, u'kemo sh'ra'isi misha kasav kein. Zuck the Ran, it can't mean that the schach is batel. Remember, the schach is the, we'll talk about bamboo just because that's what I grew up with. The schach are those bamboo poles. So you can't say, oh, that the schach doesn't exist. Like I saw someone commented on, the later Sram point out that the Rimilunil learns it this way, that the schach is bottle. Says the Ran, that can't be. Doha aminon lekaman beperek hayoshen demasnisin bechamosa domata ka'amar. Avo im lemaila hamesuchach v'amagula ki hadodi ninhu kezuza mila el kestira malatachas. Who wants to explain this question to me? I tell people I'm allowed to sing the Jeopardy song because my wife was a contestant. No?
That's so cool.
Huh?
That's so cool.
Got a trip to LA out of it. So what's the Ran's question? Did any of you have a chance to look at the Gemara in Chaf Beis? The Ran is basically invoking a Gemara in Daf Chaf Beis. And he's using this Gemara to prove that this comment of the Ri Milonil is wrong. First, let's go to Daf Chaf Beis. Try to hold our place. Silosa meruba mechamosas ksheira. Right, the Mishnah in the first perek said if there's more sun than shade, it's pasul. The Mishnah in the second perek writes if there's more shade than sun, it's kasher. And the Gemara is medayek that these two Mishnayos seem to contradict each other. Right? Zok the Gemara, haki adodi psula. Right? If there's more shade than sun, it's kosher. That implies if I have equal amount of shade and sun, it's going to be pasul. Ay, vahatnan bi'idach pirkin shechamosam ruvim mitzilasa psula. Haki adodi ksheira. But in the first pack we say, more sun than shade is pasul, implying if it's the same amount, it's kosher. Zok the Gemara, lo kasha, kamil maila, kamil mata. Right, one is above, one is below. Right, what does that mean? How does Rashi learn kamil mala, kamil mata?
So I could share how we were... Okay, so I could share how we were understanding it. I could be totally off base there. So we were suggesting that milamala, milamata is about the vantage point of your visualization. Milamala meaning like a bird's eye view. I'm hovering above and anticipating what I could visually see inside the shisaka. Versus milamata, I'm inside the sukkah,
looking up
to the schach above me, and how you're going to be perceiving the amount of sunlight
might be different based on my vantage point.
The amount of sunlight is going to be different just about, like, basically.
Right. So what you're suggesting is an excellent possibility. That's what Rabbi Nutam is going to learn, right? Rabbi Nutam in this Tosis Kezuza Mila'el learns it that way. But Rashi, and the Ran over here is invoking Rashi. Wait, let's just continue in the Gemara in Chaf Beis. Amar Rav Papa Hainu da Amri Inshi Kezuza Mila'el Ke'estira Malatachas. There are two coins, a Zuz and an Estira. No idea what that one is. So a Zuz apparently is a smaller coin than an Estira. Kezuza mila'el, kezdira mil'tachas means that if I have a tiny bit of sunlight up on top, when I go down to the bottom of the sukkah, I'll have much more sunlight. So let's say theoretically, or the Gemara is discussing a case, where it's machta machta, meaning the case that we're discussing is, it is chama, the same as tseil. I have equal amount of schach as I have space between the schach. Well, from the vantage point of the top, it's going to be equal shade and sun. When I get down to the bottom, it's going to be, right, this is the way you learned it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Gewaldig.
But I thought that according to Rashi, the istira was larger than the zuz.
And the istira is smaller?
But according to Rashi, if it's a zuz on top and it becomes an istira at the bottom, then and I thought that was one of the problems.
So again, Tosis has a kasha on Rashi that an istira is actually smaller than the zuz. That's Tosis's kasha. It's the reverse. But what we'll see, I think, when you look at the Rush will answer that there's no Gemara anywhere that says an istira is smaller than the zuz. It just says an istira is worth less than the zuz. My nickel is worth less than my dime, right? But my dime is smaller than my nickel. Right? So that... But we're going too far ahead. But Rashi... The way Rashi learns this Gemara is the Gemara tells me I measure chamasa meruba mitzilasa based on the bottom of the sukkah, not based on the top of the sukkah. Right? Now plug it in. So therefore... How does this tell the Ran that the Muskal Rishon, that the intuitive explanation that we presented in Rashi, is wrong? Why is it wrong? Based on this top-bottom thing? Was that raising your head, or you were just...
That's kind of raising my head.
Huh? Yeah?
No, okay. You were saying that Rashi says that the whole... the din is in the schach, and then... but it's not about the amount of schach. The schach could look equal, but if you're in the sukkah, it doesn't matter if you if the schach is seems to be equal in the sukkah itself. If there's more sunlight, then there's more sunlight.
In other words, the Ran is asking on this first explanation. I think what you're saying is correct. Yeah, I'll just add a little bit to it. What the Ran is saying is that you know what. If we'd be talking about the chefza of the schach being batal, if I'd be discussing that I don't have the bamboo pieces, that they are batal, so then I would judge from the area where the bamboo pieces are, which is the top of the sukkah. But as a matter of halacha, I don't judge from the area where the bamboo pieces are. I judge based on the bottom. If I judge based on the bottom, so I can't be talking about being mevatel, the chefza of the schach. Can't be talking about getting rid of, or halachically ignoring the actual pieces of bamboo. So what the Ran ends up saying is that chamosa miruba mitzilosa means that I look at the bottom, and what I'm saying is that I need more shade than sunlight at the bottom of the sukkah where I'm sitting. So the halacha that Rashi is talking about in terms of bittul doesn't mean that the schach is bittul. It means that the shade is bittul. If that's the case, yeah.
But then wouldn't this be in the wrong parak?
Yes.
Okay.
That's one problem. yes. In other words, it would seem like this is more of a psul in the yeshiva of the sukkah rather than in the cheftza of the sukkah. But...
Don't you have to build a sukkah in order to counteract that problem?
But obviously the two are connected. In other words, the idea of building a sukkah is to build a sukkah that I could fulfill the mitzvah of yeshiva sukkah in. So, pardon me. So that doesn't seem... I don't think that problem is insurmountable. The language of Rashi, though, doesn't sound like this explanation. Yes, remind me your name, though.
Karen.
Hi, Karen.
Yeah, that was a bit of my question. If it teaches that Rashi should be talking about the actual shade versus sunlight, then why does he explicitly call out the shchat?
Nachon. That, I think, is a really strong kasha on Rashi. Or on this Hesber and Rashi. The way the Ran is like the official Perush and Rashi. I think everyone follows the Ran as being the correct Shat and Rashi. But it should be, and the Pnei Yehoshua actually raises this objection. He says it would be better to have a Lashon al Shem Hatzeil Kriya Sukkah. It would be better to have the expression of that the shade is what makes it called a sukkah. Now, let's go back to the first explanation. The explanation that I'm getting rid of the pieces of bamboo. I'm being mevatel the cheftza of the schach. But again, we have two possibilities. I'm being mevatel the cheftza of the schach, which would be like the perspective of the top, or am I being mevatel the shade, which is based on the perspective of the bottom? In truth, according to either explanation, the notion of bittul is a very hard notion. Let's go back to our case when Chazer falls into my chalant. So let's say I have Chazer that fell into my barley and potatoes. By the way, if you put beans in chalent, I don't want to discuss this with you. But chazer falls into my barley and potatoes. So if I can notice the piece of chazer, so I won't employ the halachos of bittul, no? Take it out! You see the chazer, you take it out, and then you're done. Why are you... We don't say bittul on something that's nikar. So, certainly according to the explanation on being mevatel the cheftza of the schach, the notion of bittul doesn't make sense. But even according to the explanation that the Ran prefers, that I'm taking the perspective of from the bottom of the sukkah, do I have more shade or more sunlight? Even according to that explanation, it is a nikar. How could there be bittul? The concept of bittul doesn't make sense. So we have two problems, right? According to the Ran, it should be Hashem Hatzeil. And also, why am I speaking about bittul when it's a dover that's nikar? And if it's nikar, bittul doesn't make sense. If you look in the Maritz Chiyus, Ritzvi Hersh Chayis, in his comments in the back of the Gemara, he raises the objection to how can there be bittul if it's nikar. He raises this question. So the answer probably is something along the lines of this, and the Stapler has this in his Sefer on Sukkah. There are two dinim of rov. There's a halacha of bittul barov, and there's a halacha of azlinon basaruba. Bittul barov means that the miyot no longer exists. Azlinon basaruba means that the miyot is still here, but I'm defining an entire category, and the definition of that category is based on the majority of the category. The miyot is still here. It's not that the miyot is non-existent, but it's part of a larger category. Let me give the example that everyone discusses. There's a famous brief essay from Reb Chaim in his notes on Maseches Bava Kamma about this. But one of the sources of Rov is from the Dinim of Sanhedrin, no? So I have 23 members of the Sanhedrin. They're going to put someone to death. We hope not, but it happens. They can put someone to death. So you have a vote of 12 to 11. Okay, it can't be that. 13 to 10. 13 to 10, we're going to put them to death, right? Everything is grand. Now, here's the problem. Here's the problem. If I say that there's bittul barov, if I say that, oh, So I nullify, I ignore. Halacha pushes away the minority. So then I only have 13 dayanim. I don't have 23. If I'm supposed to have 23 dayanim, and I'm operating within the rules of Bittul Berov, so then I don't have 23 dayanim anymore. Now I have only 13. Because the miyot is gone. The Teretz says this is like a klotz kasha, no? Because I'm not talking about Bittul Berov. A human being can't be bottle. Right? You're here. The answer is that what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to convey the message called Azlinon Basaruba, which is that it's as if the entire Sanhedrin of 23 gave the psak, and you know what? The minimum, the minority, I should say, the minority, those 10 dayanim can't get off the hook because they disagreed. Mashal ma'adav adam, if they give a wrong psak, and they say the chilev is mutter, and then the Jewish people go and they eat chilev, so you have to bring a par halam dover shel tzibur. So I'm not going to say that those 10 dayonim who paskined that chelev was really usser don't have to bring the parhalam dover shel tzibur. They're part of it. You're part of a group. You're in the minority, but doesn't matter. You're part of the group. You have to take responsibility for it. That's a din of aslinon basaruba. What's going on in Rashi is probably, the stapler explains, this notion of aslinon basaruba in a different sort of way. Or in an application of this. But the idea of Azlinon Basa Ruba here is that, you know what? I have to decide if I have Schach or I don't have Schach. My definition as to whether or not I have Schach depends on the guy who's sitting at the bottom, whether that guy will get shade, that girl. Right? Whether the young woman sitting at the bottom of the sukkah will get shade. Gevalda. Well, the halacha tells me that if there is going to be shade for the person at the bottom, so then that covering has a din of schach. If there's no shade for the person at the bottom, then that covering doesn't have a din schach. So when Rashi is saying, al shem haschach korei sukkah, what Rashi means, I think, I'm reading a little bit into the stapler. By the way, my general approach is going to be that the Mara Makomis I'll give will be more Rishonim and the Achronim. I just think, what I've noticed from experience, and actually my students in Stern just gave me Musar on the midterm that I gave them, is that they get all bogged down trying to read the Achronim, and it doesn't mean anything to them. So if you look at it afterwards, then it will mean something. But like if you'll spend time on the Rishonim, it will be more beneficial. That's my new approach as of like 2 days ago. So, but basically, I think what Rashi is getting at is al shem ha-schach korei sukkah, meaning if there is shade at the bottom, then it's called schach. If the majority of the bottom is shade, so then the entire thing, Azlinon Basaruba, we will say that, oh, this is shade. If there's shade, it's called schach. Schach means something that is sochech. The teich, the translation of the word schach is, does it provide shade? That's what Rashi's getting at. So you're right, I'm not being mevatel the actual bamboo, and I'm not really even being mevatel anything. What I'm doing is Azlinon Basarov. And in fact, if you read the Rashi now, the part that we felt the difficult... No, let me say it like this. I'll throw this out as a question. Based on this explanation, what's the problem with Rashi?
He specifies Bittul
Berov. Rashi says Bittul Berov, Kamisha Eino. Like Schwartz, like you're fetching up the wrong tree. Like this isn't... So I don't know what to do. I think... The first explanation, the word Al-Shem HaSchach, is difficult. It should be Al-Shem HaTzeil. The second explanation, the word Bittul Berov, is difficult. I'm not really sure what to do. I think the Rashi presents certain difficulties. Okay, good? Should we go weiter and let's go back to Daf Chaf Beis. Chaf Beis on the Beis. Right, we have a contradiction as to what happens when you have an equal amount of shade and sun. Is it kosher or not? The Gemara answers, kamil maila, kamil mata. And Rashi says that we judge the kashrus based on the bottom. If you have an equal amount at top, so then there'll be more shade. If you have an equal amount at top, so there's going to be more sunlight at the bottom, that's going to be puzzle. You need more shade on top for it to be kosher at the bottom. That's what Rashi writes. Now again, there is a mitzias issue over here, because just because I have a tiny bit more bamboo versus airspace on the top doesn't mean I'm going to have more shade at the bottom. And that's a big problem. You get an impression from Rashi and from the whole Gemara that we're only discussing cases when it's half and half. Right? An equal amount of shade and sunlight. But were there to be more shade at the top, for sure it's kosher. But one second, why don't I just judge from the bottom? And from the bottom, just because there's more on the top, from the bottom could still be more sunlight. Mm-hmm. Hannah?
Are we also assuming it's midday?
Okay, so this is... So how do I judge sun and... So the Ritva over here has a brief essay where the Ritva comments that when I talk about sunlight and shade, I'm talking about, he says, midday. Again, the Ritva is actually on the next Gemara, where the Gemara discusses about sale of defanos versus sale schach. So Ritva asks the question, what do you mean? How can I discuss shade of the walls versus the shade of the roof? The sun is never directly on top. And if the sun's never directly on top, inevitably you'll have some shade of the walls. So how can this be a conversation? So he says, well, maybe we're talking about noontime and the sun is directly on top. But he says, no, it can't be. Because, okay, I need people who know things. I don't know anything about this stuff. But in Eretz Yisrael, the sun is only going to be directly on top at midday during Tekufas Tammuz. Sukkos is not in Tekufas Tammuz. Hey, does anyone know anything about this? Me either. It makes like 23 of us. Yeah.
The earth is tilted in the wintertime away from, at least in the northern hemisphere, away from the sun. So Sukkos, which is around the wintertime, would be tilted away from the sun. So I think
that's what he's saying. Okay. I mean, that's the comment of the Ritva. But in terms of this question, we're doing a lot of approximations. It is entirely possible, by the way, that if I have a majority of schach on the top, it's going to be kosher, even though there's a majority of sunlight at the bottom. And this whole conversation is only when it's half and half. And that would be based on the same yesod that we've been discussing. If what we're talking about is creating a shame schach, or a cheftz of schach, and I create the cheftz of schach in one of two ways. Either, if something is half and half, it has the shame schach because there's more shade at the bottom. If something is more schach than airspace, so by definition it has a shame schach, and even though it's very sunny at the bottom, it's going to be okay. It's very possible, I think we've all experienced this, that sometimes you're in the sukkah, and it's not particularly shady. It's very sunny. How could that be schach? Hi, it's puzzle. We judge it from the bottom. It's a good kasha. So you have to say, I don't know what you have to say, but Reb Elia Baruch Finkel, who was like the Rosh Hashiva in the Mir, he died like 10 years ago. So they published his shiurim now in Sukkah. They're actually very good. So he makes the point that maybe the Sukkah is going to be 100% kosher if you have a majority of schach on top, and that's why he's medayik in this Gemara, that the Gemara is only speaking about a case when it's half and half. Right, the whole Gemara, the whole discussion of Estira, right, Kezuzah Mila El, Kestira Mitachas, right, that's talking about when it's half and half, Ki Hadodin Enhu. But Lu Yitzuyer, If it's a majority of schach on the top, it's going to be kosher, even though it's very sunny at the bottom.
I'm sorry
to... Yeah.
This is obvious. It's just, if the Mishnah says it, merubah in one case, merubah in the other case, those are the clear-cut cases. So why does it need to say it on both ends? I thought then it's like talking about...
Right, so the Gemara, I think, is understanding that merubah in one way, merubah in the other way, is talking about a case where I have equal amounts of bamboo.
So it's talking about, sorry, I just want to make sure I understand. It's talking about two cases in each case. It's talking about one case.
We're assuming that the Mishnah in the first parak and the Mishnah in the second parak are both discussing a case where I have the same amount of pieces of bamboo and the same amount of airspace. And the only difference between the two cases is whether there's going to be a majority of sun at the bottom, majority of shade at the bottom. Right? That's the way the Gemara seems to be learned according to Rashi. Deep breath. Did people have a chance to get through this Tosfos Kazuza? Not yet? Okay. So the question is, should we do the Tosfos now for a few minutes ourselves? And you'll do it on your own, or would you prefer that we finish 5 minutes early, and next time we learn, we'll pick up from this thesis? It's 5 minutes. Chofetz Chaim is vidu, you know? What happened to your 5 minutes? Whatever, I'm happy either way.
Can we try
to do it now? Yeah, I'm fine with that. Okay, so let's look at the thesis. So first Tosfos, the Tosfos Kan and Tosfos Kazuza, the beginning of it is just quoting Rashi. We learned the Rashi. V'hikshu Rabbeinu Tam. Hikshu Rabbeinu Tam. D'rav Papa Gufei D'hocha Islay V'parakama D'erevin Parot Ke'omed Is Mutter. V'hosam Nami Paskinon Hilchus Ahachi. So Rabbeinu Tam's first kasha is that the Gemara in Erevin has a discussion of Parutz Ke'omeid. Now, Erevin and Sukkah actually are very similar. They're both about defining space, to some extent. Parutz Ke'omeid in the Erevin context means if I want to build a mechitza, and I need the mechitza to be, let's say, 10 amos. So if I have 6 amos that's built up and 4 amos that's blank, that's fine. That is omeid merubala paritz. If I have paritz merubala omeid, that's no good. If I have 6 tfachim, or yeah, let's say 10 tfachim, I have 6 tfachim of blank space, of airspace, and 4 tfachim of wall, then it's puzzle. Paritz ki omeid is a machlekes in the Gemara and Tesvav and Erevin. And Paritz ke'omeid means I have an equal amount of wall and airspace. Rav Papa says paritz ke'omeid is okay. Now that's talking about mechitzos. That's an erevin. The Rabbeinu Tam is assuming that hu hadin by schach, because you have to be able to think like a warped lamdin. Schach is also a mechitza. Right, there are really 6 mechitzos wherever we are. 4 walls, a floor, and a ceiling. So the schach is a mechitza. So says Rabbeinu Tam, parot ke'omeid is going to be kosher according to Rav Papa. This Gemara is Rav Papa. So therefore, if I have an equal amount of bamboo and airspace, so by definition, it is called schach. Paritz ke'omeid is mutter. If by definition it's called schach, so it doesn't matter how much shade and how much sunlight I have, based on what we just said a minute ago, if I have more bamboo than empty space, it's going to be for sure okay. And according to Rav Papa, even if they're both equal, it should for sure be okay. We paskin like Rav Papa, so why is there a conversation in this Gemara? That's what being in Tam's kasha. The old kasha, Rabbi Nutam asks, that the Gemara condition Yud Aleph writes, the Avdi Incha Dekar Lepauga De Zuza Estira, and Estira is half a zuz. Estira is half a zuz, So then presumably it is smaller, and that's the opposite of the way Rashi said it. So therefore Rabbi Natan comes up and he suggests something that Sarah said probably 25 minutes ago. Mufash Rabbi Natan kan milmaila, misha modi ta avir milmala, ki hadodik shera, lefishu omed kiparot. Ava omi momata ba aret, ma'ayin klapi maila, vidome ki hadodi psula. Lefisha avir shu rachov kizuza, dome bein of cotton ki estira, machmashu rachok mimenu. Raila dova vanhiva ininu kachagovim. We'll probably have to do this next time as well. But what Rabbi Natan is saying is like this. If I measure the amount of shade, pardon me, if I measure the amount of bamboo versus the amount of airspace between the bamboo pieces, I can measure from two places. I could go with my tape measure up on top, or I could eyeball it. Okay, it looks like it's the same. Sister Rabbi Natan, if you eyeball it, you look up and you say, oh, it's probably the same. Zok Rabbi Natan, in that case, you're making a mistake. Because people mistake things when they are farther away. It's harder to judge distances, right, when it's farther away. So according to Rabbi Natan, Kezuza mila el kestir mol tachas means that if I'm looking at the schach from the bottom and it looks like it's the same amount of schach and airspace, so then it's going to be puzzle. Because I'm making a mistake and there's really more airspace than bamboo. But if I'm measuring from the top so and it's the same, then it's going to be kosher. Now, what we'll have to develop a little bit more next time is that Rabbeinu Tam's take is actually the opposite of Rashi. It's the opposite of Rashi in terms of Rashi says that I judge shade and sun based on the bottom, and the Rabbeinu Tam is going to say I judge shade and sun based on the top, but that is a coming attraction. Okay, Chevra, thank you. Could I ask somebody to maybe put together a WhatsApp group? You're ready to. Can you add me to it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Shkoyach. Okay. So thank you for coming.